The U.S. Attorney's Office in Anchorage yesterday announced an indictment by a federal grand jury for wire fraud and false statements to the U.S. Department of Agriculture. The indictment is in connection with the construction and management of the Valley Dairy, doing business as Matanuska Creamery in Alaska. The six-count indictment named 48-year-old Kyle E. Buse as the sole defendant. Buse is the co-owner of the dairy. U.S. Attorney Kevin Felda says the allegations in the indictment charge that as early as 2007, Buse was involved in a scheme to defraud the U.S. Department of Agriculture through federal grants.
It's alleged in the indictment that he submitted false invoices in order to obtain a payment for things that he didn't really purchase or spend the money on. In total, it's alleged that over $120,000 was fraudulently obtained.
The total amount of the USDA grants was $643,000. The Matanuska Creamery is located off the Palmer-Wasilla Highway. They sell wholesale and retail dairy products through a storefront at the creamery, which has been open for about 4 years. Felda says the USDA's Office of Inspector General worked closely with the FBI to put the case together. The maximum penalties are up to 30 years in prison and $1 million in fines. A trial will be set for a U.S. federal court in Anchorage within 70 days. A call to the owners of the Matanuska Creamery was not returned yesterday. The operator of a local newspaper has been arrested as a fugitive from justice in Kansas City, Missouri. 50-year-old Dale Edward Smith, general manager of the Capital City Weekly, was taken into custody on Monday on an outstanding warrant for felony non-support of a child. The extraditable warrant was issued by the Jackson County Sheriff's Warrant Division in Missouri. Smith was arraigned in Juneau District Court on Tuesday. According to court documents, a Juneau police officer initially went to the Juneau Empire Building but was told by the circulation supervisor there that Smith worked out of the Capital City Weekly's offices that are located downtown on North Franklin Street. Before taking him into custody, the officer verified Smith's identification by checking his Missouri driver's license. During arraignment on Tuesday, public defender Tim Ayer said that Smith had taken a job at the Capital City Weekly for the purpose of paying off the child support. Ayer said Smith was not running from a violent crime. Assistant District Attorney Amy Williams said that Smith had only been in Juneau for a few months and he still presented a flight risk. Superior Court Judge Luis Menendez agreed and set bail at $10,000 cash. The amount of child support that Smith allegedly owes is still undetermined, and an amount was not specified in court on Tuesday or in an affidavit that was filed by Williams. Online court records for Jackson County, Missouri, could not be immediately verified for timeliness and accuracy. The next Juneau hearing in Smith's case is set for January 9th. The Capital City Weekly was acquired in 2004 by Morris Communications, the parent company of the Juneau Empire newspaper. Over 3 years in prison for a Sacramento man involved in smuggling oxycodone into Juneau, 24-year-old Travell DeMar Pinkston was sentenced in U.S. District Court in Juneau yesterday. He was ordered to spend 42 months in prison with 3 years of supervised release. Prosecutors say Pinkston was a member of what they call a large-scale conspiracy that used commercial package delivery services as well as couriers flying commercial airline flights to bring the oxy into Juneau. Proceeds from the drug sales were then sent back to Sacramento. Two cousins from Kodiak faced charges after a homeless man was run over and left to die 4 years ago. 24-year-old Bradford Blondin entered a not guilty plea on Monday to criminally negligent homicide and two other charges in the death of 43-year-old Justin McGriff. Blondin's cousin, 25-year-old Brian Blondin, has been charged with tampering with evidence. Police say McGriff, who lived at a campsite along Pillar Mountain Road in Kodiak, was found dead April 2, 2008, after being hit by a vehicle. The autopsy said he might have survived had he received treatment. Police took a vehicle owned by the Blondins a few weeks later. A backlog at the state crime lab contributed to the delay between then and a grand jury's review of the case just last month. The Alaska Judicial Council is recommending four nominees for the Alaska Supreme Court vacancy created by the upcoming retirement of Justice Walter Bud Carpenetti. The council has nominated Susan Cox, Chief Assistant Attorney General in Juneau, Ketchikan Superior Court Judge Trevor Stevens, Alaska Appeals Court Judge Joel Bolger, and Andy Harrington, an Assistant Attorney General in Fairbanks. All have practiced law in Alaska for about three decades. The Alaska Judicial Council met over the weekend to interview applicants for Carpenetti's seat. He will retire next month. Governor Sean Parnell now has 45 days to make an appointment. The council was created in the state constitution as an independent commission to evaluate applicants and judges who stand for voter retention. The council reviews each applicant's education and experience and investigates their background. It also enlists the support of Alaska Bar members who interview, evaluate, and rank applicants. The council also encourages public comments about applicants for the bench. NOAA Administrator Jane Lubchenco is not sticking around for President Obama's second term. The Commerce Undersecretary for Oceans and Atmosphere told her staff yesterday that she will be leaving her job.
I announced to the NOAA family today that I will be leaving at the end of February. So I'm really proud of all that we've been able to accomplish and know that I can leave knowing things are in good hands because there's a lot more to be done.
Lubchenco helped lead the administration's response to the Deepwater Horizon spill in the Gulf of Mexico and is responsible for fisheries policies and marine mammal management, as well as the National Weather Service. NOAA's support for expanding quota share programs for allocating fisheries has been controversial here in Alaska. She's been professor of marine ecology at Oregon State University since 1977 and a longtime advocate for science and science communication to the public. She said yesterday that she will continue those efforts.
So I envision myself continuing to play a role in being a champion for science and for use of science, especially in making environmental decisions. You know, the scientific information helps us really do a better job of managing fisheries so they can be sustainable, in protecting healthy ocean and coastal ecosystems because we depend on them for so much. And if we want to be good stewards, then the scientific information can help us understand how to do that.
Lubchenco is also a former president of the American Association for the Advancement of Science and has been part of President Obama's science team. A recent report commissioned by the U.S. Department of Energy could speed up approval of export terminals for liquefied natural gas in the lower 48. As APRN's Peter Granitz reports, some energy experts say the effect will be minimal on Alaska, but that does not mean that there is not a market for Alaska's gas.
The report says that overall, exporting LNG will result in a net benefit for the economy. The country has a glut of natural gas, a supply that Deloitte's Tom Choi says we underestimate. That supply could help meet the growing global demand.
Yeah, there could be enough of a market for lower 48 and Alaskan LNG.
Some advocates for exporting LNG hope the Department of Energy will take the report's findings into consideration when it weighs the pending 15 permit applications. Choi says the Department of Energy's delays could hurt the chances of U.S. LNG making it to foreign markets because Australia is developing its own pipeline.
Well, I think part of it depends on what the DOE does. If DOE delays further, then it makes Australia more attractive.
More attractive to Asian markets in Japan, Korea, and India, the same markets Alaska producers might eventually sell to if producers on the North Slope opt to plunk down the tens of billions of dollars required to build a pipeline. Charles Ebinger from the Brookings Institution says the state should skip the pipeline and build an export terminal in Prudhoe Bay.
A very reasonable question would be, has anybody seriously looked at an LNG project's cost in comparison to the pipeline route down to Tidewater? Because I think it would be cheaper.
Ebinger says a terminal off the North Slope would take significantly less time to build than a pipeline, meaning the gas could get to market sooner. Governor Sean Parnell has offered more than $350 million for a liquefaction plant on the North Slope. In Washington, D.C., I'm Peter Granitz.